Okay.
It was half price. Beautiful. I always wanted to try it.
All right, so let's get started. We are going to get rocking and rolling. This is the Daily Power Parsha. I am your host, Rabbi Ari. Now, I call this Daily Power Parsha. That's been the name for the last 4 months. As we discussed a moment ago, I'm thinking of changing the name, maybe to something like Carpool Kabbalah or something like that. Hold on, let's find something with a T in it. Torah and transportation, something like that. Like, we got to go, we're taking the show and we're taking it on the road. That's how we roll. Okay, so I want to speak about, I think, three or four things. And what I'm going to do is, I'm not sharing my screen. I'm not going to share with you the biblical text. You'll have to trust me. Most of the time, I will be looking at the road for safety purposes, which I need to do. But here's the thing. Here's the big idea. We are going to be exploring some really powerful stories and episodes. And although I may not be looking directly at the camera, I am having you all of you directly in mind as we explore this. Okay, first thing. For the reading that we're going to support today, you know, it's a double portion, Chukat and Balak. So we're covering now, and both portions are just filled with ideas. So I'm going through as many as we can and as many insights as we can, but we're still a day behind in the daily readings. So today we're going to explore the third of the combined readings, which would have been for Tuesday. Today's Wednesday, but it's still good. It's still Torah. And it's still the third combined reading. So the reading opens up with a discussion about the passing of Aaron. Yesterday we spoke about the passing of Miriam, three siblings, Miriam, Aaron, and Moses. So Miriam passed away in yesterday's reading. In today's reading, Aaron passes away. The way it goes down is, God says to Moses, take Aaron up the mountain, a special mountain, and on top of that mountain, he should take a son with him, his son Eleazar. Remember, Aaron had four sons, Nadav and Avihu. They passed away, though, on the day of the inauguration of the Mishkan. And then he had two more sons, Eleazar and Itamar. So the older of the two remaining sons, Eleazar, he was told to bring up on the mountain with him. And he was going to pass. It was told that he was going to pass away on top of the mountain. And in the process, or right before he passes away, to transfer the mantle of kohuna, of high priesthood, to his son, to Eleazar. So that's what happens. The Torah says they both, all three, went up the mountain. Moses, Aaron, his brother, who was going to pass away, and Eleazar, his brother's son or his nephew. And there, Moses takes the priestly garments, the special priestly garments of the high priesthood, off of his brother, transfers them to his son, Eleazar, and in other words, transfers the leadership of the Kohen Gadol, of the high priesthood, from father to son. And at that moment, the father, Aaron, Moses' brother, passes away. Now, the way this passing, this death, is described in Jewish literature is known as a death of neshika. What is neshika or neshika? It means a kiss. It's the death of a kiss. Now, it's not the kiss of death. I think that means something else in English. The kiss of death sounds like something negative. But death with a kiss means that it's a very, very sinless experience. If for those of you taking our Life After Life class, the class about the afterlife that we do Tuesday nights, so last week in our first lesson, we spoke about the transition of soul away from the body. And we explained how it's a difficult, usually, for the most part, it's a very difficult transition. Why is it difficult? Over the years, the soul became accustomed to the ways of the body. So to leave, it's difficult, it's uncomfortable, it's painful, it's jarring. But Aaron's passing, it was as gentle as a kiss. Misas Nishika, the death that's likened to a kiss, seamless, pain-free, very, very, a very clean experience. He transferred, no one finished business. He lived a good life. He led the people in spiritually as a high priest. He was there with his brother, standing up to Pharaoh. And in his final moments, he gave his legacy to his son, Elazar. And with that, he passed away. No regrets, no baggage, very clean. This becomes a desirable way of passing away that Moses, later on, I'm not jumping in this narrative, all the way to the end of the Torah, the very last chapter of the Torah, the end of the book of Deuteronomy. So that's book number four. So the end of the next book, the final book of the Torah tells us, actually, it might have been before that. I would have to look it up, which I can't do right now. Because there might have been a conversation before that between God and Moses, where God tells Moses, essentially, you will also pass away before, you're not going to go into the promised land for hitting the rock, which we discussed yesterday as well. Okay? But Moses at some point says to God, or the way it's understood by the commentaries is he's asking to pass away in a similar way as his brother did, with pain-free, seamless transition, and with passing along his legacy to his child. And God basically grants him some of that, but not all of that. So the transition, we understand, was fairly smooth. But the idea of transferring the legacy in his own lifetime to his son, Moses didn't receive that wish. A wish wasn't granted. So when it came to Aaron, the high priesthood was transferred. When it came to Moses, transferred to his son. When it came to Moses, Moses' son didn't become the next Torah leader of the people, didn't become the next leader of the people. Yehoshua, who was Moses' primary student, he took over the mantle of leadership, of Torah leadership from Moses. It was not hereditary. It was not biological. It did not follow a family procession. It went to, relative to the family of Moses, a stranger, but someone who's intimately connected with Moses, who was the primary student of Moses. And there's a beautiful lesson here. Some things are transferred, bequeathed with DNA. Some things are only earned through diligent work, through effort and hard work. So the priesthood is transferred. Father gives it to son. That's how the priesthood works. When it comes to, and that's why Aaron gave that to his son, gave it to Elazar on top of that mountain, which is the reading that we're covering today. But contrast that with Moses passing. Moses passes away alone on the mountain, or having already appointed Joshua as the next leader, did not go to his child. The message is that when it comes to Torah, Torah is not passed down automatically from father to son. If you want Torah, go and grab it. Your father need not have been a Moses for you to become the next great Torah scholar, the next great leader. And it's such an empowering message. To be a Kohen, it has to run in the family. But to be filled with the knowledge and wisdom of Torah, to be a scholar, you don't need any specific heritage. You can be, it doesn't matter. You can take it, you can learn it, you can earn it, and it can be yours. You can own it. So that's perhaps an inspiring message, but it remains a longing. You might call a wish unfulfilled for Moses. He really wanted to pass away, our sages tell us, like his brother Aaron did in the reading we're covering today, peaceful with his son at his side, having transferred that mantle of leadership, but it wasn't meant to be. And in truth, I'll tell you this, Moses' heartbreak or disappointment is our hope. What constitutes his disappointment of his son not taking over the mantle of Torah leadership becomes our hope that anyone can become a Torah scholar. So his loss, so to speak, is our gain or our lesson about what it means to, about the availability of Torah for everybody. So that's one idea that I wanted to share. The next idea is that after, well, so three people go up in the mountain and only two people return. Moses, Aaron, and his son Eleazar go up the mountain and only Moses and Eleazar return. Aaron passes away and is interred there on the mountain. The people realize immediately that Aaron has passed away. And the Torah tells us, Vayis'ablu kol b'nei Yisrael, or kol Yisrael, that the entire nation of Israel mourned, Vayis'ablu, like an avel, like a mourner, we call it a mourner in Hebrew, an avel, a mourner. Vayis'ablu means, and they mourned, the entire Israel mourned, Shloshim Yom, for 30 days. The commentaries point out, Rashi immediately points out, based on the ancient commentaries, Rashi says that what does it mean that all of the Jews mourned Aaron's passing for 30 days, both the men and the women? It's not like Aaron was just a leader for the men, right? When it comes to Moses' passing, it says that the B'nai Yisrael, the sons of Israel, mourned, which implies the males mourned, the men mourned. Doesn't mention specifically the women. When it comes to Aaron, it says, call Yisrael, all of Israel, not gender specific. In other words, the entire nation, both men and women, mourned the passing of Aaron. And the commentators explain why. And this is something that you probably know, but this is where it comes from. Aaron was dedicated and driven, in addition to his day job as high priest, he did something else. Aaron was... He was absolutely driven his whole life to ensure that people were getting along. He went out of his way to ensure peace between people. He didn't wait till people came over to him with a problem. He sought out to endear couples, spouses to each other, families to each other, complimenting, you know, one in front of the other, just to endear one to the other. He always went out of his way for peace. In fact, we learned something really beautiful from Aaron's conduct. The Talmud says that the way he would create peace, let's say two people were quarreling, he would go over, it wasn't only family, it could have been to anybody, any two people. He would go over to one party and say, hey, you know, I know you're in a fight with so-and-so. Look, let me ask you a question. If the other guy, I was speaking to the other guy and he told me that he wants to, you know, reconcile with you, but he's feeling, you know, a little bit embarrassed. Would you be open to reconciliation? Sure. He went to the other guy. I spoke to the other guy. I said, would you, he's open to reconciliation. Are you open to reconciliation? Sure. And with that, he broke the ice. See, sometimes we don't mend the fences. We don't mend relationships because no one wants to go first. So what Aaron did was told each party that the other guy wants to go first. The other guy first. Right, then that's not me going first. We sometimes refer to this as maybe a white lie. And the message is sometimes you're allowed to modify the truth a little bit. Shalom. When truth and peace kind of bump heads, you opt for peace. And you, truth, okay, truth will wait a minute. Let's get peace here. You don't always have to be brutally honest and create friction. You can hold your tongue. You can bite your tongue to keep the peace. But in truth, the Rebbe explains, Aaron wasn't bending the truth at all. He wasn't lying. It wasn't even a white lie. The Rebbe, see, throughout the generation, we always understood that Aaron modifying the truth. He hadn't spoken to the other party. Before he came to the first party, he hadn't spoken to them. The party hadn't told him that he wanted to make out. He just made up. And he played the game and he got them both to make up. And the ends justify this, right? Because they even there was lying here. Not even a white. Thank you. guys, are you guys with me?
Did we lose him? I think there's a technical problem.
He's still frozen?
Mm-hmm.
Do you see his face?
No.
You're unmuted?
I unmuted myself, right. Now he's back, I think.
All right. Ray, can you hear me?
I hear you.
All right. Oh, good. Excellent. All right. Thank you. Okay, good. I'm back. I must have gone through a low reception area. Okay. Let me cut to the chase. Aaron's conduct was understood all the years was that he was bending the truth to make peace. You know, he hadn't spoken to the other party, but he was winging it. He was, you know, making it work to get peace. But there's a much beautiful, much, much deeper way of understanding it. The Rebbe says that Aaron knew the truth. And the truth is that the other person, of course, wanted to make up, but was embarrassed to go first. So when he said that he knows the other guy wants to make up, even without speaking to him, it was true. Because in truth, the other guy did want to make up, and he wants to make up with the other guy. So what Aaron was doing was not lying or not saying a white lie or bending the truth. He was getting beneath the lie. The lie is the pride, the ego, the embarrassment, whatever that gets in the way of the reconciliation. Aaron was getting past the lie to the deepest truth, where we do want to get along with each other and we want to exist in a state of peace and reconciliation. So that's a little bit about Aaron. And that's why the Torah tells us that the entire nation, men and women, everyone, I'm sure the children also, everyone mourned Aaron even more than Moses. Now, Moses was the great Torah teacher and scholar and leader, but Aaron brought peace to families and brought peace amongst the community, and that's something that everybody could relate to and everybody sorely missed. I'll tell you this, the world needs Aarons more than ever. More than ever, we need people to step up like Aaron, like Aaron the high priest, with love, unconditional love, and pure connection to bring a broken world together and to mend hearts that are perhaps in different places. Okay, so that's the second idea. So the first idea that I want to speak.
I have a comment. Sure. But it's, you have to be strong, the person that's reaching out that way, because you know, you never know what's gonna come back from, you know, if you're the one making the initiative when it's not unclear how receptive the target is going to be.
Yeah.
You have to be very strong. And what if the target is not receptive? Then you have to be doubly strong.
A lot of strength, and I say a lot of faith in the other, and a lot of love. Love can melt, unconditional love can melt a lot of stony hearts. Love can really break down a lot of barriers when it's genuine. And Aaron was so loving and lovable. You couldn't not, how did he not respond? I mean, everyone loved him. He loved everybody. It's like he was. Yeah, but you're right. It does take a lot of strength, a lot of confidence, and a lot of love. Yeah. So that's the second idea. Again, first idea was the idea of transferring legacy, death of a kiss, the Nisas Neshika. Second idea was about the mourning of Aaron's passing. So the third idea, and I think we'll leave this as the final idea for today, the Torah tells about a few battles. This is, I mentioned this yesterday, we're now at the end of the 40 years of wandering. So the Jews are just about to go into the land of Israel. I mean, they're on their final approach, if you will. They've been in the holding pattern. They've been circling the runway, you know, for 40 years, refueling, you know, in the air. And now they got their sights on the runway. They got clearance, and now they're ready to land. We spoke about the nation of Edom yesterday, that their cousins, Esau's family, that didn't want to let them in, so they went around. And in the next reading, today's the reading that we're exploring today, it talks about how there's more, some more hostility that the Jews encounter. Amalek gets involved, the famous antagonist enemy. The Amalek gets involved in starting up provocation against the Jewish people. Jewish people navigate that. And then the Torah tells us very mysteriously about an episode that happens at the Arnon Valley, with the Arnon Brook. What happens? So it's very vague when you read about it in the Torah, but when you look at the commentaries, it comes in sharp relief. Rashi explains it right there on the page when you study from the Chumash Rashi. Rashi, the basic commentary, explains something really beautiful. What happened was there were enemies of the Jewish people that were hiding in caves. So the Jews were passing, they were walking along, and they were going to come to kind of a valley between two hills or two mountain ranges. And they were going to walk on a path in a valley in between. And so some nations that wanted to stop the forward progress of the Jewish people, they decided that they're going to go into the caves and hide and wait for the Jews to pass by. And then from the tops of the mountains, within those caves, hidden in those in the crevices of the cave, they would start pelting, you know, with stones, maybe massive boulders, and God forbid, take out the Jewish people. That was their plan. But what happened was, before the Jews even arrived to that little valley between the two mountains, God caused a miracle, and the two mountains, the two sides of the two ranges, came together, moved together, right? Tectonic plate shifting. The two sides came together, and the boulders on the one side entered the caves on the other side and crushed the enemies that were lying in wait. And the Jews passed by oblivious to it all, because that all happened before they got there. The enemy was taken out, and they walked, I guess, above the whole thing because it came together. However they walked past, they traversed it without even knowing that there had been an enemy lying in wait. It was only a little bit later that they saw the remains of the enemy crushed. God made another miracle to kind of reveal the first miracle that he had done. And then the Jews sang a song of praise and thanksgiving to God for taking out the enemy. And it's a very interesting episode. It's very vaguely written about in the actual Torah text. You have to study with the commentaries, otherwise the whole story just doesn't really mean anything or say anything without the real understanding of what it is. But I love this story because it really highlights a powerful truth. This is something that I spoke about, I think, when we did the course on miracles a few months ago, right after Passover. And that is, there are different types of miracles. There's certain miracles that are clear and obvious. Like, you see it and you're like, wow, you know, thank God for that. Whew. But then there are countless miracles that happen before we even get there, before we even get to the challenge. Like the Jews who were in danger, by that enemy waiting and laying in wait. The enemy before they even got there. Our lives are filled with miracles that we don't even miracle we might never even know about. It's only on occasion that God grants us the favor of giving some clues, like he did with the Jews by Arnon, dropping some clues. By the way, this could have been, it could have been, it could have gone another way, but I took care of it, no worries. In other words, what I'm trying to say is, when things go smoothly, things, no drama. I woke up, did my thing, ate some food, everything was peaceful. We take it for granted. We have no idea, and we will never know, the countless miracles that God is sending our way to smooth the path of life before us, so that when we get to those situations, they're easily traversable and easily passable. So let's always be grateful for the miracles that we know about, and the many, many more that we will never know about, but that God is surely doing to pave our path in life. So in short, we have three ideas today, three ideas that I shared today. Number one, legacy. Legacy is beautiful. It's great to transfer that mantle of leadership, as Aaron did, from father to son. But embedded in that story is another lesson, and that is that Torah is available to us all. So that's lesson number one. Like Moses and it's available for the taking. You want to be a Moses? Be a Moses. A Joshua? Be a Joshua. A scholar? Be a scholar. It's available in all the languages. You want English? Great. Russian? Fantastic. French? You got it. Whatever language you want to study Torah in, it's available. Just Google it. I'm sure you'll find it. So that's message number one. Message number two is with regards to Aaron's activities to create peace. Peace is more important than even if they're doubling down and saying they don't want peace and they're stomping their feet. At the core, that's a facade. That's the lie. Somebody says that they don't care and they don't want and they don't. It's like a child who the parent says, you know, no dessert or no ice cream before dinner. The child says, I hate you. Really? Take it easy. You don't really hate. You're just getting frustrated in the moment. As adults, we hold on to things a little bit longer sometimes. Okay. But the truth is, deep down, Aaron knew this, we should know this. Deep down, we do want reconciliation. We do want peace. We do want love. We do want that harmony. No one wants to be separated. Separation is not good. The final point is be grateful for the miracles, seen and unseen, because as many as we know about, there are countless more that are happening right in front of us, but a little over the horizon, so that by the time we get there, it'll be smooth. Let's be grateful for all of those things in our lives and all the people in our lives that God put in our lives to help us. All right, that's it for Daily Power Parsha. I look forward to seeing you tomorrow, same time, same channel. This time, please God, from the comfort of a non-moving set. So I look forward to seeing you, a stationary edition of Daily Power Parsha. Have a wonderful day. Don't forget, tonight we have a special Torah studies class, 7:30 p.m. The topic is, what did I write in my email? Sticks, stones, and words have to truly influence someone else. We'll talk about Moses hitting the rock as opposed to speaking with the rock to produce water, and we'll draw, no pun intended, nourishing and satiating wisdom from that experience, from that episode. All right, looking forward to seeing you a little bit later if you can make it at 7:30 tonight or tomorrow at 12. See you guys. Take care. Have a wonderful day. Thanks for sticking with me even through the loss of reception.
Okay.
All right. See you guys.
Bye.
Take care.